The Nonprofit Voice is a premier radio program featuring nonprofits on Long Island every Saturday morning. For the past 6 years, we have learned about, been inspired by, and celebrated hundreds of nonprofits in our community. The Nonprofit Voice is produced by Marketing Works, the only full-service marketing and public relations firm that works almost exclusively with nonprofit agencies. We pride ourselves on our reputation in creating strategic marketing and public relations campaigns, successful virtual, hybrid, and live events, as well as powerful social media and digital campaigns. As the leaders in nonprofit marketing, no other agency understands the industry as we do, and we are committed to the success of each and every one of our clients. Marketing Works hopes you enjoy this week's featured nonprofit. And this week's featured nonprofit is Long Island Alzheimer's and Dementia Center. And I am lucky to be sitting here with the executive director, Tori Cohen. Tori, welcome again to the second half of the show.
Thank you very much.
We're going to talk about COVID. And we want to know how it affected what you do. It affected all of us, obviously, but you couldn't stop and work out of your home. You had to be at work because of all these people with Alzheimer's that needed to be, they needed to be tended to, and their support people and their caregivers. And did you take any time off?
Well, so for me with COVID, this was definitely, we know it hit every industry, but it was really one of the most difficult things that I had to deal with in my role with this organization, because while COVID started to happen, we were functioning in our center with our participants, as we call them, and in our families and our staff. But at one point, we did have to close down from Nassau County, and I think it was March 16th, 2020, and we were not able to get back into the center until April 19th. Now, back into the center, of course, we were, you know, going there and working in our offices, but my team was really working remote. And I have to say, in the week after we closed and not having any idea of how we were going to serve this population, which we say is a very difficult and challenging population because they're the memory impaired, and as our focus is on hands-on programs and services, to pivot to a virtual platform and even go back to using the telephone, it was all, you know, a really big shift. We really stepped into things very quickly and started figuring out what was going to work for our families and our participants, what platforms were going to work, who knew what. We talk about Zoom. No one knew what Zoom was.
No one knew what virtual was.
No one knew what virtual was. You're talking about a memory impaired person that, they, you know, looking at a screen, a possibly our staff member, it's not an easy it's not an easy thing. It's very, you know, scary for them. So there was a lot of work and patience that went into it. But there was a lot of good things that came out of us switching to this platform as well.
Is there a consistency that if they miss a certain day, like every day they get up and they get dressed and, you know, they follow these guidelines like people, like the special needs population? Is it like that with Alzheimer's and dementia?
Yeah, the routine is super important for them. So once they start getting, you know, ready and know that there's a place that they're going, yes, they definitely take a pause when that routine gets stopped. And the fact that they weren't able to come back to our program and they were isolated in their house with their caregiver was very, very tough. The problems that started happening is, you know, there is, at this point, since we don't have a cure, a progression of the disease, there was a lot of our families with their loved ones that progressed. And a lot of things that came out of it too, again, sort of going back to that mental health, is their caregivers started to have some depression and anxiety. And so did some of the participants. And it's really hard to decipher what's depression and what was progression of the disease. And one of the most important things that we all have to really care about and worry about is the individual that has a disease that's in the house is one thing. their caregiver who's burning out every day in this 24/7 disease is really important to be looked at and tended to.
So the caregivers are one-on-one. They're, you know, so that's the person. So when you say they're in the house, so they're staying there even though COVID is out.
Yep. Well, a lot of families, as I say, caregivers, it's true for people that may not, caregivers, yes, I said before, it could be a home health aide or could there be their family member. But a lot of people were very hesitant about letting strangers in the house during COVID. So it really was a lot that came down on the family. And as we say, there's a lot of members in certain families and they might have a certain role in what they take and what they come in and do. And a lot of people had to stay away because of being nervous about the COVID.
So were any of the caregivers doing things virtually with them?
Yep. So with our caregiver support groups, we started doing using the virtual platform Zoom. So a lot of our support groups went on Zoom, which really became very successful. And in the moment in time, we're still doing Zoom because it's easier for a lot of these caregivers, a lot of these caregivers to access the group this way instead of driving somewhere. So we're getting a lot more people in our groups. And the other part of it too is that, you know, our focus is on Long Island, but the fact that these types of groups are online, we have a much further reach of who we can speak to. So if someone in North Carolina wanted to get on the Zoom because they saw our services, they can get on the Zoom. And we were doing a lot of caregiver trainings on certain topics that the caregivers could listen in on. And there we partnered a lot with assisted livings that either brought food to our families, delivered arts and crafts activities so we could do it online together. There was a lot of really wonderful things, a lot of PPE equipment that was delivered. So there was a lot of partnerships with other organizations.
If they're in an assisted living, do they have a caregiver as well that stays with them? Or is it the independent living versus the...
Most of the people that we relate to are, if they're in an assisted living, they're living in the memory unit.
Yeah.
Which there's staff that works with them. But if someone requires a lot more help, then some of the assisted livings do have another aide that's working with the individual on trying to get them showered up and out if they require more attention. But at our center, we do allow aides to come in if our participants need help. They are allowed to come into our center.
What kind of training do they get?
Really, it's like the start of Dementia 101. We know there's a lot of people that are caring, wonderful people that work with this population. But if you don't know how to treat the symptoms, everyone just thinks Alzheimer's disease and dementia is about the memory. There's so much more than that. So there's a lot of behaviors. It could be simply from how do you approach someone who has Alzheimer's and how you speak with them to how you redirect them in conversations and move on from there.
How do you know you have Alzheimer's?
Well, the most important fact that I would say is that you don't know 100% you have Alzheimer's until you get a brain autopsy. So unfortunately, it would be when we know 100% someone has Alzheimer's is when they pass away. But in the midst of when someone starts to have symptoms, it's very important that they go see their doctor and go see a neurologist so they could do the proper testing, because there's a lot of other diagnoses that could be going on besides Alzheimer's that are mimicking the same symptoms. So that's what's most important, because sometimes people are like, oh, this is, you know, what's happening. It could be because of stress and something situational. It could be because of a brain tumor that's affecting the brain. It could be a deficiency in vitamins. There's a lot of other things that need to come into play and need to be ruled out before someone really does have a diagnosis.
We talked about fundraising, and we talked about money from the state, money from the federal government, but you don't get either. You only get Nassau County.
Yeah, with this organization, we really have our revenue streams coming from a bunch of different, lanes. So yes, we do get, and we're thankful for money that we get from the county for our day program and our in-home respite program. but we do rely a lot on fundraising events, which during COVID was very difficult because a lot of them were canceled, our in-person events. So we had to really change things up. And during COVID, we had a virtual comedy night, which ended up to be very successful, that a lot of people were in attendance. We just finished in June with our luncheon event, which we ended up being sold out with a 220 people, which was successful, but it was outside on a rooftop at the mansion in Oyster Bay. We also rely on a golf outing that's in September and then a casino event in November. But we also do have a lot of third-party fundraisers. We have a young man that's been running 100 miles the last several years and just hit his mark of $100,000 that he's raised for the organization.
Oh, wow. Who is he?
His name's Jay Aspero. His grandmother had Alzheimer's, and it's what's called the Ann Aspero Run. His grandmother's name was Ann. And what he wants to give back to caregivers and their families about just how much they need and how much they need programs like ours to get them through. So he's pretty remarkable, really, really remarkable guy. And we do rely on a lot of support from donors, other people in the community that have been touched by this disease. And we also have revenue that comes from our programs and also, what am I missing now? Grants,
yeah,
like grants that we apply for. So, because the one thing I didn't mention is that, yes, some of our programs that we're discussing do have a payment, but we will never turn someone away if they really need our services. We have a hardship fund that can help people depending on what need they want and have.
Well, you have a lot of fundraising events, and even during the virtual time period, which was last year up until now, it's slowly coming back, but you're not going to see a gala this year, probably maybe the end of the year, but it's still not one of the events that people should be doing. Yep. It's too close. But the other events and the outdoor events, the golf outings, mm-hmm. They're not a problem, I don't think, from our end. I've worked on a bunch of them. We find that the golfers can't wait to play golf. The sponsors, well, they might not have as much money as they had in the past.
Right. Well, I was going to say, we did have a golf outing during the pandemic because people did want it, and it looked a lot different, but it was really successful. And going towards our golf event in September, I mean, we're really actually at this point, we're honoring a family that's named the Denahan family, and we have around 28 foursomes already. We're almost sold out at this point. So people really want to get out there and give as much as they can to the organization. Like we say, everything looks a little different. I think the most important part of being an organization that didn't hide under the covers during COVID, like really showed all that we were doing, a lot of the feedback is, if they don't have money to give right now, they will give when they can, because they really, really like the programs and services that were coming out during COVID for this population.
How were your donations last year during this pandemic? I mean, it's we know the actual events were not obviously up to the par that they had always been, but yep. How were your donations? I mean, were they going up because you were having such a hard time fundraising?
Yeah, I feel like the people that could give and when that weren't hit as hard gave what they normally do, and sometimes a little bit more, that they had a special COVID fund and they gave us money to do with the COVID pandemic. So if you ask how were they? Yeah, we were very lucky to be able to open and continue on with our mission, but we're still in a position where we need as much financial help as we can, and to be around and be sustainable and be available to the Long Island community.
You didn't do the Monte Carlo last year, right?
The casino?
Casino.
Yeah, we canceled that last year, but the fact is that we still have that slated for November, and we have a few honorees right at this moment, and we're hoping that that's going to be okay.
I think it should be.
Hopefully.
I
mean,
well, I haven't seen too many events being canceled yet for then.
Yeah, no.
I think people are trying to get it, unless there's a new wave that keeps us...
I know, let's all like cross our, you know, our fingers that that's not going to happen.
But I've seen a lot of successful casino nights, and people have a lot of fun at those.
Yes, yes.
But as far as the galas, do you have one planned?
No, we really actually, we had a gala many years ago, and our gala ended up switching to a casino event because we were finding that it wasn't... The people that usually came to the gala were changing, and really, as I said, in the last 6 years with my role, we have met a lot of people and a lot of different people and what they like, and so we're really trying to create events that are going to bring in more people, more businesses, and more individuals that have a connection with the disease.
So right now, your up-and-coming event is the golf outing.
Yes.
And where is it going to be?
So our golf outing September 27th, and it's at Sands Point Golf Club.
Oh, nice.
Sands Point, yes. Yes, it's a really great day. Hopefully, we cross fingers that it will be a sunny day, and people really love coming to the event. We definitely have people that have come year to year.
And you have that many events. Do you get different people at each of the events and different supporters? What do you ask the same people?
Yeah, the golf definitely brings in a whole other group of people. Our luncheon event switched this year because for the last couple of years it was called the Women's Luncheon Event. This year we just had it as the Here's to Hope Luncheon, and we had
I like that.
Male and female, which was great.
Yeah.
So that definitely changed who was coming. And the casino event brings in some people from the luncheon event, and then just new other people from other
businesses.
Depends
on who the honoree is.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
There you go. Tell me about your continuing education credits.
During COVID, we had applied to be a New York State provider in continuing ed credits for social workers. Thought it was another good way to offer programs for professionals and also drive more people into the organization that are social workers in hospitals and other organizations and nonprofits that we hadn't met yet. So it's been really great because we offer them for free, but we usually connect with a sponsor who gives us money to sponsor the event. So they get highlighted in the beginning, and then there's a topic. Last week, we had a doctor on from Huntington Hospital that her name is Dr. Jamila Raymore, and she focused on palliative care and hospice, and we had a really great audience of people, and it was really successful, and we're really just trying to focus on topics that people will be interested in and want to attend.
So Tori, tell me about your plans now. What do you see in the future for Long Island Alzheimer's? LIAD.
LIAD.
We have to start saying that.
LIAD. Well, look, my plan for LIAD in the future is to continue to be innovative and follow what caregivers and individuals that have Alzheimer's and disease need. And we really, when we talk about when I started and where we are now, that we have, I don't want to say we're a one-stop shop because that just sounds maybe not okay, but we really are offering a lot of programs at the center. PT, physical therapy, where you don't have to leave and go to an appointment, you can be there. Occupational therapy, pet therapy, art therapy, music therapy. Really, really trying to combine. At one point, I like have a hope that maybe we can also have a doctor that is available at our center to help with medication management when people are having issues with that, so they don't have to run to their doctor or end up in the hospital either. We like to try and keep people aging in place and using services in the community.
Can you do telehealth?
Yes, we can do telehealth.
Because I've just been working with somebody today who just started doing telehealth with another agency of mine.
Yep.
And we just had a long conversation about things. I can give you names and things like that.
That's great.
Yeah, and you know Hassam, you met him at community care, and he does telepharmacy.
Yep.
Which also helps a lot.
Yes. Yes. There's a lot of need, and there is still a lot of people that are hesitant. I mean, we know a lot of the population have gotten out and started going places, but there is a lot of hesitancy to some people at this point that they're still isolated in their homes.
And that came through a grant, by the way, for the telehealth. So maybe there's some grant out there if you have somebody who looks for grants, see if there is anything. I don't want to cut you off again, but I want you to give me your phone numbers.
Yep. Our phone number at the Long Island Alzheimer's and Dementia Center is 516-767-6856. And also our website is www.lidementia.org.
And you can make some big donations there, right?
You can make
right on
big,
the site.
Yep, right on the site. Easy to access. Very easy to navigate our website. And we appreciate any type of donation. It all goes a long way for our individuals.
Thank you so much for being our guest. You're listening to The Nonprofit Voice. I'm Ron Gold.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.